Oh, I forgot all about Popeye.
So there's this year while Cronin is head and things are looked at, but I don't know what really comes out of that year.
Not much. because Jim wanted to continue the program of setting beam storage in the main wing. That was crucial for PP, and I think he felt the cooling of P-bars was sort of pie in the sky, and too far off, and you could get high luminosity with the PP scenario, and that's what we should go for. And in any case, one needed to start studying storage of particles in machines.
Mm-hmm.
And Russ wasn't about ready to help any of that out. I remember there was Jim was pushing very hard to get some low beta studies made in the main wing, to get some quads put in and to study what happens, see if you can achieve low beta, see if you go through resonances, see if the beams blow up, things like that. And Russ was being very, very uncooperative about that. I pushed hard trying to get that through, and it was an impossible situation. But finally, Jim had pulled together a good group. Bob Lovelace came in, Jimmy Walker was there. So we started to have a real department. That was the start of the CDF department.
Mm-hmm.
Irwin Gaines was in it, I think, at that time. First people were Lovelace, Gaines, Walker, and perhaps part of me, and Conan. And maybe even some technicians. I don't know. Anyway, Jim tried very hard to make that thing go. Russ cut him up into little pieces because he wouldn't cooperate at all. And
publicly?
No. He had control of half of the resources over there. So if we wanted to do anything in the accelerator to study storage or anything, he more or less had control of it. And Jim, I think Jim just said to hell with it. He had other things to do with his life than play politics. And so he walked off and quit.
Mm-hmm.
And that must have been in that fall, sometime. So I remember.
So then you took over that effort?
Then Bob put me in as head of the Sliding Beams Department with Jimmy Walker as the assistant head. And so I was supposed to do Tevatron magnets and things like that.
Yeah. Superman.
Well, it was a funny kind of thing because it was clearly a long time ahead, even under any scenario. You have to realize we still didn't have a successful doubler going at this point.
Far from it. We didn't even have funding.
Yeah. when did the funding start for the doubler?
79.
79.
The official, DOE funding.
In June?
July.
Was it June, July 79?
Just after Leon became director.
Okay. So
formal director, I guess.
Basically, I felt that the function of that department was to study detectors. It was a more or less a holding operation to give people sort of a home to live in while we made studies of how you would do flying beings. The people in there were Tom Collins, and I guess Ryuichi was in that department. Erwin Gaines, Peter Lyman was in at one time. There are a number of people that worked in it, just as sort of home, that may have been, I never worried about assignments of where people were really supposed to be. But a lot of work got done, but a lot of it was crazy. There was one time when, for an experimental hall, we had something like, I wish I could remember that number. It's something like $300,000 or something for the experimental hall. And this would have been a hall that was, Bob was always for very small experimental areas, and this would have been a hall that was maybe 30 feet by 30 feet or something, just a pit. And the detector was supposed to be hoisted out of it by cables. And Russ, it was a terrible thing, because since Russ was in charge of basically the experimental enclosures, he had that money, and he was all set to go. He was going to build an experimental hall. That fit in with his plans, because they wanted to do PBARP in the main ring anyway, and so he needed a hall. And so I remember we had to answer the question of if we had a detector that weighed 2,000 tons, could we hoist it in and out of this pit? And Russ actually went off and got some donkey engines, I think is what you call them. It's a big electric motor with gears and a drum on it for steel cable. And each one of these things would lift 500 tons. And so he said, you know, you put one of these things at each corner and you just hoist the thing up. And so you have a building up above ground, and then you have this old pit that you drop the detector down into. And he actually went out and bought one of these engines. And the story I heard was his brother was in this business. Now, this may be real crap, I don't know. But his brother was in the business of selling machinery. But I do know that he bought the things to sort of test how much you could lift and things like that. He wasn't one to go out and calculate something. And so we had to worry about whether we could lift our cables and the detector and things like that. My feeling was that it was just a bunch of crap and it would blow away in a little while, so I didn't take it too seriously. But it was absolute. Well, and that was before Leon came, okay, because Leon put a stop to a lot of this nonsense. Fortunately, we never got enough money to build an experimental hall altogether, because I think we'd have made a real mess out of that. I mean, we might have all had a pit that was 30 feet square or something like that to put a detector in. And finally Leon came, and we had that shootout in November. And that was the end of all of the nonsense, basically, about what was going on, because that put the rest, that there was not going to be PRP collisions in the main ring. Rubia had gotten the SPS committed to this program, so he wasn't around anymore. When Rubia left, that pulled the rug out from under McIntyre and Klein. So they got left. actually, with the dregs of the thing. You can still see the scars of it out here. There was an extraction line that Klein put in with his graduate students and undergraduate students. They spent quite a bit of money, actually, extracting protons from the main ring to take over to where this little cooling ring was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That all had to be thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a terrible time. Well, it would be very interesting if you could, and I don't know any way to do it, but to find out how many resources got put in from the lab by Russ into that cooling ring and into those experiments and the extraction and things out there that could have gone into sort of a serious program around here. I realized this a lot later. I didn't realize at the time that it was as bad as it was, but I think Leon understood this, got control of the thing. And that was when all the attention got diverted onto getting the Saber to work as a machine and things like that. Russ's influence gradually declined, and he went away, and that program just withered.
Was the lab involved in too many different projects, and they needed to focus in on refining?
Rubio was proposing, and colliding P-bars in the main ring, that would have taken all of the resources of the lab, because we still didn't have a successful Saber at that time. They've taken all of the resources and used them and concentrated them on that one thing, and the rest of the experimental program could have just gone to hell. When Bob set up the colliding detector facility, that's what it was really called, for colliding detectors. In the research division, and when he gave Russ a free hand for generating antiprotons in the accelerator division, he didn't resolve this conflict of the groups that were wanting to do these various kinds of things. And Russ had a lot of resources at that time. The accelerator division controls about half of the laboratory's budget, so there's a lot of money there. And I don't know what Bob's intention was. Maybe that's what he wanted, but certainly Russ was fairly wild in his conception of what you could accomplish and what you could build, the time scale that you could build it on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I have that thing.
This?
Is it?
This is
that schedule? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got it from Chuck.
Oh, I see. This is hanging on Rubio's wall for a long time. it has something in here for
this
everybody.
This is the tape. This is the
over-optimistic.
April 78
yeah.
Usen's schedule.
See, the protons are cooled in October 78. RF cooling ring accumulate 10 to the 10th. That's in December. Extract. This was the little ditzy line that they spent a lot of money on. Protons, cooling ring to booster, P-bars to booster. P-bars go injected into the main ring. There's another version of this.
Is there another page? Continuing?
There's a thing where you do P-bar-P collisions in the main ring in March, and in June you're doing P-P collisions with...
hey.
picks up.
Turned off?
Yeah.
Is that the one that was
clicking? This is the clicking one.
Oh, shoot. It's
just a
question.
For what?
It's Eric.
You want me to turn this off, Lillian?
Hold on.
Yeah, this is...
Is it in... It's like this one, Adrian, but okay. Does Chuck have things like that?
Sometimes. It seems like, you know, he can get his hands on things.
There's one that does this, but it also shows PVRP collisions and PP collisions a few months later and papers the physical review. It schedules the whole thing.
Okay.
And that's the one that Rubio had on his office.
Okay. So I'll ask Chuck if he would have something.
Yeah. It's like this, but it shows. May people are cool. It showed collisions and when the papers were being written. It went on a little bit past this. I think the papers were written in June.
Okay, maybe he'll recall this also. Rubio had this on his office here?
CERN. CERN. Okay. CERN. I don't know how one would get a copy of that. I could write and ask him for one if you want.
Sure. You'll send you one. Yeah. You send him a mail message?
No, I'll write him a letter and ask him if he still has a copy of it.
Has he come out here at all since he went to CERN to do his experiment that he couldn't get here?
He was here at Leon's 60th birthday. He gave a talk at that party. At that session in the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been here, but he hasn't been... I don't think he's been here other than just casually since then.
Okay, so we're off. We got hung up on the schedule.
It often happens.
Okay, Leon's made his decision, and then what happens? Leon is in... And
have the shootout.
Oh, okay, we have the shootout. That sort of fixed it.
That's the end of 78.
That fixed the political setup and more or less fixed the political setup. There's a little bit of dribble from it afterwards for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I guess at that point,
the next note that we have then is that they choose a magnetic detector.
Well, yeah.
And that's 6 months later.
Leon... So that was no. Let's say Leon made that decision in November,
mm-hmm.
November 12th. That was Armistice Day, in 78. Then there was a decision. Okay, now this starts to run out of being very good. There were two things written. I broke people up into two groups because there was a big question. We didn't have very much money, and there was the two detectors at CERN were being built, one magnetic and one non-magnetic, and it looked like a good exercise would be to go through the question of, do we want a magnetic detector or don't you? Because there's a lot of difference in the way the construction of a detector goes and the cost of it on the basis of that. So we split into two groups to try and build a design a detector, one colorimetric and the other with a magnet in. And then we had a shootout internally between those two groups, just for fun. It was a friendly shootout, and nobody got damaged on that. I think Peter Lyman led the group on the colorimetric one, and Walker led the group on the magnetic design.
Dave Klein involved in that?
Some.
Okay.
Klein was flitting in and out. You see, the people that were involved at that time were the Fermilab group, and then Caltech was involved with Bob Walker and Jeffrey Fox. The University of Chicago group was here. In fact, I guess when Cronin came in, we actually collected together as much as we could some real users that would be interested in building a detector. So the Chicago group was there. Oregon with Diebold and Nodelman, Davers, and a number of other people.
Mm-hmm.